closing in on the end of the year, right? And I think it was, a couple months ago, that we just talked about finishing the year strong and talked about the 13th month. I think we were a little bit behind. I think, the way things are going, we're heading to being closer to where we need to be. So, thank you to everybody who was generous and either caught up or got more generous or whatever you did. You know, we don't do the offering thing, so it's kind of incumbent upon all of us to, weigh that out in our hearts, both for our personal welfare, but also for seeing the kingdom grow. So thank you for that. A little progress report for you. Also, I was thinking about the whole idea of the world that we're living in, and obviously I talk about that from time to time. Sometimes I marvel at the craziness of humanity, and then I remember what my heart's like, and it kind of brings things into perspective. It helps me to not be so critical about the wild things that I see people do to one another, and even on behalf of God. It's amazing how many people are willing to speak on behalf of God. And I sit there and I go, well, you must have gotten that out of the Bible because you certainly didn't find it in it. You must not know much about who God is, otherwise you wouldn't be representing him that way. But as men and women of God, it's really important to recognize that we have to find our way so that we can help other people find their way. And that might be the greatest motivation that we have to be faithful to God. And I want to talk a little bit about that today. If we get lost on our journey, if we get lost on our way, how are we going to be helpful to other people? Because the world is a very dark and a very lost place. I think Eugene Peterson says, crashing about in the darkness. That's pretty much where our world is at. So thinking about that, and I was also thinking about the concept that, Jesus is making disciples. He didn't stop at the resurrection. He just gave us the commission and gave his disciples the commission and said, go and make disciples of all the nations, teaching them to observe whatsoever things I have commanded you. And I am with you. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So whether you live in 2020 or whether you lived in 20 AD or 50 AD or whatever, Jesus is still making disciples, and we get to be right in the middle of it. And that's why we're starting to kind of kick into gear this mentoring conversation. I had a great time the other night with five teenage men, some of them getting ready to go to college, and some of them are 1 year away from it. And we had a great conversation about the idea of being mentored by God, but then also seeing ourselves as mentors. And that's kind of the thread that we want to pick up on through the year and talk about a little bit. So this is the question as I read the passage, as we read this passage together. What are some specific ways my father has mentored me? I think Andy picked up on this and started the conversation a few weeks ago. That's because we've been kind of kicking this around and talking about it. Elders are getting together kind of for our yearly planning meeting on the 4th of January. We meet every month, but one time we devote some time just to say, okay, where are we going? Where are we going as a group of people? So you can be praying about that. But one of the key questions is, what are some specific ways that my father has mentored me? And I'd like you to ask that question for yourself. How has God shown up and mentored you in specific ways? And in light of that, I'd like you to turn with me to Hebrews chapter 11. I really, until this last couple of weeks, I never thought about this as a mentoring chapter, but it really is, because the whole Bible is all about mentoring, right? Discipleship has many aspects to it. Mentoring is one of the aspects of it. And I want you to think about two different aspects of mentoring as we read Hebrews 11 today. There are outcomes, and then there's the process. Now, stick with me on this. There are outcomes, and then there are process. You're going to see a lot of discussion in Hebrews 11 about the outcome. But there was a process that led to the outcome, whether you were Noah or whether you were Rahab or whatever. There was a process. And you've heard me say before that process is every bit as important to God as it is your destination. And so I'd like to think about that as we go through chapter 11, thinking about my faith and thinking about your faith, particularly in the context of us together being mentored by God. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, verse 1, the evidence or conviction of things not seen. For by this kind of faith, the men of old and the women of old, because there are women in this list too, okay? So men of old, as in a group of mankind, by it, the men of old gained approval. So that's his introductory statement. He's explaining what faith is and the nature of faith. It's the assurance of things that you're hoping for, and it's the conviction or the evidence of things not seen. Now think about how counterintuitive that is to being human. We live the opposite way. We think the opposite way. Our emotions live the opposite way. But the people we're going to read about now, in their process, experienced outcomes that we want to experience as well, even though our processes might look much different. By faith, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of the things which are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. God was testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though Abel is still dead, he was dead as a doornail when Cain killed him, his voice was crying out from the ground when God came to Cain, but he is still speaking. Why? Because the sacrifice that he offered was a better sacrifice. What was the difference with his sacrifice? It was a blood sacrifice, and that's what made it a different sacrifice. So, first example. And so, in his outcome is that he is still speaking, even though he is dead. How long was his process? Pretty short, it seems like, right? You know, it doesn't seem like he lived a tremendously long period of time. So, that's the first people that he mentions here in the list of faith. Here's an interesting guy. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. And he was not found because God took him up, for he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. Okay, again, outcome. What was the outcome? He was taken up. He didn't have to die. You know, does this happen all the time in the scriptures? No, seldom. So it's a picture, right? One of the first pictures is the picture of a blood sacrifice. One of the next pictures is the idea of actually being taken from the earth without dying. So think about what God is painting as far as the broad picture about faith by starting out with these two examples. And then he returns to the subject of faith and he says, now remember, without faith, it's not possible to please God. So Enoch had a faith. Abel had a faith. Cain had a faith, even though it looked much different than his brother. Without faith, it's impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is. Think about how radical that is. You have to believe God is, even though everybody sitting here has never seen God before. And you know that there are a lot of other people on the earth that think that they have seen God, right? And they define God in a different way. But faith, it's impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he not only is, but that how we live, our process relates to our ending. And he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So I don't just follow God just because it's a good religious idea or it's the right thing to do. I am wrapped up into a story that has a reward to it. We've talked about that before. He goes on. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about the things not yet seen, in reverence or respect or in awe, prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. You think Noah was born with reverence? You think he was born in awe for God? I don't think so. When did he start building the ark? He was kind of an old dude. He'd been around quite a while. Took him a while to go through the process of building the ark. But in respect, at some point in his process, some point in his journey, he revered God enough to do what God told him to do, even though it had never rained on the face of the earth. This is why he's in the list, you know? And this is why he is another one of the examples that's here. By which he condemned the world and he became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. So what this author is trying to do is he's trying to look at the story and he's saying, How did this part of the story relate to faith? Remember, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. It is the evidence of things not yet seen. For by it, the men of old and the women of old gained approval. So he goes on. Verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. Again, did it happen when he was 10? Did it happen when he was 20? I don't think so. Abraham went through a process, didn't he, that got him to where he needed to be. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. He lived in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, his descendants, fellow heirs of the same promise. What's the promise? Well, the promise relates to the blood sacrifice. We are covered by the blood of Christ, which is the ultimate blood sacrifice, right? And also, we are going to follow in the way of Enoch, right? whether your body has totally turned to dust and it's in the grave, or whether you're still hanging on the earth, what's going to happen to us? We're all going to be gathered from the four winds to experience our reward. And this is interesting. He says, by faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And you know, you can look at New York City, or you can look at LA, or you can look at the remnants of Babylon, you know, over in Iraq. You can look and see what they look like. Do our cities stay? I mean, look at the pyramids. Look at the civilizations. They come and go. And so somehow Abraham was going, I am looking for a different kind of a city. This was a part of his faith. It's why he was willing to go out. It's why when God calls us from a place of safety and asks us to go out, it's such a big deal related to our faith. And then he talks about Sarah, his wife. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead, at that as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. And by the faith of Abraham and his wife, the Jewish nation, which would bring us Messiah, was launched. And so that's a whole other story of faith, right? It's one of the big stories of faith of history. It's still going on today, you know? How many people in the world hate the Jews? Well, you know, there's a reason that they hate the Jews. All of these died in faith without receiving the promises. Okay, so get that. They all died in faith and they didn't receive the promises. But having seen them and welcomed them from a distance. Now think, that looked different for every person we just mentioned. They had a different picture because they had a different process. They lived in a different time. They lived in a different environment, but they experienced the same thing. They saw the promises. They came to faith and they welcomed them from a distance, and they confessed that they were strangers and they were exiles on the earth. This has got to be the most satisfying thing about, you know, being in an end-of-life care unit. And if you still got your brain, if it's still working, it's got to be one of the greatest things to be laying there and going, I was only a stranger here anyway. I was only an exile anyway. Now I'm going home. I'm going where I belong. I mean, what a gift that is. All of these died in faith. They saw those things. They welcomed them from a distance, confessed that they were strangers and exiles. Think about the conflict that presents. Because everything about our world, the American world, the modern world, is all about comfort and self-actualization, right? So we spend our whole experience from the time that we're born basically bathed in the lap of comfort and luxury, right? For those who say these kinds of things that we just talked about, they were confessing that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, they make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. So it's not just a city, it's being expanded into a country. So the idea is a destination that is not only a city, the New Jerusalem, but it's also a country which has a whole different environment to what we experienced here. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. What's that saying? You know, Abraham could have looked at this and gone, this is crap. I'm out here living in a tent. I think back where I came from. Wouldn't it be easier to go back? And don't you know people who have decided to go back? They decided to go back to Egypt? I mean, isn't that what the people wanted to do? You know, why have you taken us out, you know, and fed us this miserable manna? We want to go back. But as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Now, that is you, that's me, and that's all people who have chosen to live by faith. It's not just a matter of, you know, we get the benefit of the faith as we live here. We get the benefit of the faith as it relates to the reward that's described here. So we return to Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, so he launched, he left, now he's being tested, he offered up his son Isaac. Big test, right? Is there a bigger test than to offer up your only son? No. It's prophetic though, right? Isn't he a type of God in this situation? Wasn't he mentored by God to be able to come to the point where he was able to give up his only son, and not only give up his only son, but to sacrifice him himself? So you see why this list is, this isn't like our neighbors. This isn't like being called to be, you know, an American citizen. I mean, we have many blessings, but we're being called to something that is really not from this world. He offered up Isaac, who had received the promises, was offering up his only begotten son. It was he who, to whom it was called, in Isaac you're told, your Isaac, your descendant shall be called. He considered, and this is interesting, this is where he got to on his journey. This is his process. We see the outcome, but there's also the process. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Do you think he might have read about Enoch? Do you think he might have read about, about the idea of resurrection? You think he may have had an idea about it? By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, so this is this family, you know, that's passing on this faith, blessed each of his sons, the sons of Joseph, and he worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff, end of his life, right? He can hardly hold himself up, so he's worshiping. He's holding on to this city and this idea of a better country all the way until the end. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the Exodus. Think about Joseph's life. Oh my gosh. To have your whole Jewish life robbed from you, to live in Pharaoh's house for your whole lifetime. Can you imagine the sense of loss that he must have felt throughout his life? But he gave orders concerning his bones. I want them to go back home. He probably didn't understand that they're going back home. That's going to happen. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ, or Messiah, greater riches than the riches and the treasures of Egypt, he was looking for the reward. Again, Moses. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, and seeing him who was unseen. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, they were drowned. So there's Moses' story, all wrapped up in just a neat little bow of a few verses. But what are they describing? They're describing Moses being mentored by God and getting to the destination, this destination that God wanted from him, so God, through faith, could get him to the ultimate destination that Moses wants and that these men and women want. By faith, then, it moves on to this, through the story. By faith, the walls of the Jericho fell down. Another faith story. After they had been encircled for 7 days. You know, this crazy group of people are walking around a city, and they've never, ever been at war before. And, you know, so they blow trumpets, and the walls fall out. I mean, how weird is that? That would probably impact you for at least a generation. By faith, Rahab, in the middle of all this, the harlot, did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. And then he pivots and he says, that's all the time I have for talking about particulars. Okay? And think about what he's covered. He's literally covered thousands of years of God's story lives. And he pivots. But he can't give it up, right? And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell you about Gideon, about Barak, about Samson, about Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets. All of these men and women who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong. I have a box around that because for some reason it stood out to me when I was studying it. They became mighty in war. They put foreign enemies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings and also chains and imprisonment. This is like a big picture on the people who lived the life of faith. If it wasn't tough enough to be Moses, if it wasn't tough enough to be Abraham, it didn't go away, did it? It kept springing up into more generations and into more lives. Just like it has sprung up into your life. Just like it has sprung up into my life. My life of faith is instructed by Moses, but it doesn't look anything like Moses' life. They were stoned. Some of them were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins. They were destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, and he puts in here, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Wow, what a picture. You know, this is a great chapter for me to read whenever I start feeling sorry for myself, you know, start complaining about how tough my life is, how difficult it is. All of these having gained approval through their faith. Okay, so they gained approval through their faith, but they did not receive what was promised. Why? Because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. They would not be made complete. And that's how we know that the story of Abel is every bit as tied into the story of Kyle or of Bill or of Chad or of Liz, because apart from us, it can't be made full. And that's why our lives matter. That's why our lives of faith matter. That's why learning what it means to make our own journey of faith is so important for us. We need them, but apparently they needed us. And you've heard me say before how cool I think it's going to be to walk into the Moses room wherever he's having dinner, you know, and to walk in and to listen to Moses tell his own stories. I mean, how cool would that be? Or to walk into the Rahab room and the people that are drawn over there and, you know, what a story. You know, how many people will that story resonate with? But, you know, that's just the backdrop for this, like, incredible next chapter. You know, in the original languages, there weren't chapter markings. You know, we put those in there because it makes us easier, it makes it easier for us to find things and for us to read. But in the original manuscripts, there wouldn't have been a chapter marking here. It would have just, maybe a quasi-paragraph would have happened here. So it would be seamless from chapter 11 to chapter 12. And that's why the word therefore is there. Okay? Therefore. So therefore, everything that went before it, all the stuff that you just subjected yourself to reading again, even though you all knew it, Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, because of this great cloud of witnesses. Now, think about what he's already said. You can't just look at the witnesses as being the people who are in here, because this was just the beginning. You have to look at the cloud of witnesses as being much, much greater and much bigger than this, because this perfecting, this completing has been happening for thousands of years now. And this cloud of witnesses that we have around us encourage us to do what? To let us lay aside every encumbrance. What's an encumbrance? You know, it's like carrying a backpack with 50 pounds in it. Some of you have done that professionally in the military. Some of you do it because what you need to do with the things that you carry to work. But when you have an encumbrance that you carry along, it's really something. You know, I've lost like 80 pounds. I pick up something that weighs 50 or 60 pounds right now, and I go, oh my gosh, how did I carry this around for the years that I did? That's what an encumbrance is. It's not something that you necessarily go, oh, crap, I have to lift this. You're going, it's cumulative. It's part of being human. Let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So there are encumbrances, and then there are things that trip us up. That's the best translation that I know related to entangles us. You know, it kind of like, you've seen it in all the superhero movies. It's the kind of thing that grabs you around the legs and then it trips you and you fall over and you become vulnerable, right? That's the idea that's here. Sans the superheroes. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. I don't know what it says in your translation where with the word author, but probably the best translation would be leader, because he went first. That's why it's translated author. He went first. There's nothing that Jesus is expecting from us that he hasn't already authored. He has already led us there. He's already gone there. He hasn't just told us to go there. He has already gone where he's asking us to go. Fixing your eyes on Jesus, the leader and the finisher or the perfecter. He's the one who's responsible for getting you where he wants you to be so that you and I will be in the book with our stories that are stories of faith rather than no faith. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured his cross, despised the shame that came with it, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And, you know, you have to stop somewhere, right? But we can't stop there, so we got to stop with verse 3. For consider him. Consider Jesus. You know, after all of this, look at Moses, look at Abraham, look at Enoch, you know, look at all of the examples that are in the cloud of witnesses. Even though we have all of those, we're supposed to consider him. Because, you know, Jesus is the ultimate example and ultimate strength for us to follow. And why are we supposed to consider him? What was his outcome? What was his process? For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and you will not lose heart. Because those are the enemies of our faith, growing weary and losing heart. How does it happen? The encumbrances weigh us down. The entanglements discourage us. And we grow weary and we lose heart. And how do we avoid that? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had to go to God in my heart and say, please rescue me. Please rescue me. I am sinking. And I'm sure I'm not done doing it yet. So, I was thinking about us, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit. You know, you read different books about, you know, what your you know, what your core is. And so I was thinking about our core, which led me back to looking at Hebrews 11, because our core basically is kingdom faith, right? Because if you don't have kingdom faith, does it really matter what your big plans are for what you do in the world? But these are distinctives that we will continue to pursue, and we have pursued now for 40 years, a relentless search for authenticity. We want it to be authentic. Multiplying kingdom vision. We know that it's more than religion. We know that it's relationship. We know that it's king first, kingdom second, and then comes church. It explodes out of that. Then also, this is something I've had to learn about, and I don't know if you've noticed, but I've tried to be way more encouraging than I've ever been before, because I didn't know that growing up. I never saw that anywhere. So in my father paradigm, which we'll be talking about, I didn't get that. And so I had to learn that with my own kids, and now I'm realizing that it's not a part of my DNA, you know, to be encouraging, to notice things and to pass them on. So that's something that I feel like we've really grown as a body. I feel like I've grown in that. Also, sharing mentoring vision, which we're going to spend some more time talking about that, because now we're a 40-year-old fellowship with three generations and now a fourth generation kind of emerging in the midst of that. And we have this opportunity to mentor on like three or four different levels, which is extremely exciting to me when I think about our journey. And I don't look at it like, oh, look what we did 20 years ago, or look what we did 30 years ago. I'm thinking, look at what God is doing now. Look what's happening now with the foundation that we've laid together. And then, as always, finally, there's the issue of perseverance. Why? Because you don't want to grow weary, and you don't want to lose heart. And that's why we live in community together. Because at any one given time, any of us right now, I mean, I don't think Novotny's sitting here right now, but, you know, your sister dies. She's his younger sister. What does that do inside of you when that happens? It crushes parts of you. It raises questions that you would just as soon not ask, let alone answer. And so the idea of the things that we go through together as a community are really important, related to continuing in a pure heart, knowing God and doing kindness and growing life. Yeah, which is why we ended up with this whole thing. It's in our heart to help your heart experience the fullness of God's grace in your life. And that's how that fits together back into faith and back into hope and back into love. And, you know, we've done a lot of things to try to stimulate conversations. How many conversations are yet to be had? Do you think the main conversations of life are happening among the bulk of people in the world right now? Answer, uh-uh. There are more and more people, and there are fewer and fewer things happening. So that's part of our heritage together, and what we'll be pursuing together again for another year, right? Because except for those of us who are gallivanting off to Florida for the winter,